Back chat.
Politics and current affairs.
Back chat.
Woo. Your alternative to talk back.
Yes, indeed. You are listening to Backchat here on FBI Radio, your freshest rap, news and current affairs. I'm Swetha Das.
And I'm Shami Sivasubramanian. As always, we're going to give you the news you may not have heard on your airwaves.
That's right. First up, our producer Eden Faithful sat down with Sally Stegall, the federal member for Warringah, about her new climate change bill, which aims to ensure Australia has a clear and positive national response to the challenges of climate change.
After that, we have Dean Price from Choice asking the big questions about whether or not young people should be paying for private healthcare.
And as always, we want to hear from you. If you're in your 20s and have Medicare, do you have private health insurance? I think that's a pretty hot topic. I mean, I don't know if it's a hot topic, but it's a topic that's coming up quite a lot now.
Yeah, recently. Particularly in Australia.
Yeah. So if, like, do you think we need it in Australia if you have Medicare? Are you worried about not having it, or are you just going to take it as it goes? We want to hear from you. You can join us in on this conversation. Text us in on 0409-945-945 or tweet us at BackchatFBI.
To show us all what a beep lying, beep backstabbing, beep treacherous, beep beep she is. Thanks, Colin.
Backchat, your alternative to talk back.
From destructive bushfires to devastating floods, within the first 3 months of 2020, Australia has taken on its fair share of environmental disasters.
It's clear that the effects of climate change are already showing themselves, and while our country burns, our government seems to be doing very little. That's why the federal member for Warringah, Sally Stegall, is introducing a new bill to Parliament, which will ensure Australia has a clear national response to our climate challenges.
Our producer, Eden Faithful, sat down with Sally earlier this week and discussed the bill and its implications for Australia. We've got that interview for you in just a few seconds.
The Australian taxpayer even pays for the toilet paper she uses. Does she go down to the chemist to buy the tampons? Or is the Australian taxpayer paying for those as well?
Fact Chat, your alternative to talk back.
Hi there, Sally. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. To begin with, and to contextualise the bill, would you be able to explain to us to what extent Australia is at risk from the effects of the climate crisis?
Look, it's not just at the moment, it's ongoing. And sadly, we are all the reports and the IPCC indicate that on a current level of emission reduction in Australia and around the world, we are on track for a 3-degree warming world. So we're a long way from staying below the 2 degrees, which is the commitment that everyone's made at the Paris Agreement. So what that means is, I think, things like bushfire season. We're seeing the impacts now with, like, the bushfire season we've had over an extended period of time, an extended geographic area, and areas burning that have never burnt before, like tropical rainforest. They are up to 3 times more likely to occur and will occur a lot more frequently. So rather than these events being sort of 10 to 20 years apart, they will be every few years. So you can start imagining what that means in a disruption, from a disruption point of view in terms of local economies and sustainability of businesses. It will also mean huge disruption to supply lines for businesses. And real question as to the viability of infrastructure, from a government point of view. So huge impacts. And that's without even touching our regional communities that are impacted by drought, where, for example, agricultural practices and our farming industries are really hurting because their revenue is down due to the drought. So in terms of impacts, and I'm not even getting on to the big impacts being, high levels of storms, hurricanes, big weather events, which will come a lot more frequently. I was talking with our, national insurer groups, and their biggest cause for claims for them is actually severe hail events, which are becoming more frequent and more severe. So in the past, when, you maybe had a hail storm, you had a certain amount of damage, you now have much greater damage because they're A, more sustained, more violent, and bigger house burns.
Absolutely, yeah, and we've seen that in Canberra recently as well, which is
exactly.
It's horrific to think that it could only get worse.
Exactly. And so, the reality is, this is all happening on 1 degree of warming. So we're on track to get to 3 degrees of warming if we don't change current practices. So that's why I'm not really interested in having a conversation with the government about who's doing what or who's done what in the past. All I'm really interested in talking about is what we need to do for the future.
Yeah, good on you. Fantastic. So can you tell me a little bit about your climate change bill?
Yeah, so the main goal of the bill is to lock in what I would say legally is the commitment we've made under the Paris Agreement, which is a net zero by 2050. Most 70 or 80 countries around the world have committed to that. Most of our corporations have committed to that. And our state governments and territories have committed to that, both Coalition and Labor. So this should not be up for debate or dispute. And I very much urge the government to just come on board with a consensus of that being our common ground and our common goal. So the Act locks that in as our goal and then sets in place 5-year emission reduction target budgets to ensure that we get there in an orderly way, taking care of the concerns, of course, for example, for regional equity, to make sure that we do not have to bear more, are properly compensated in state other areas that have to do more change, for example, from an employment and industry perspective, and to make sure there is that, a fairness. Because I know in the debate on climate action and reducing our emissions, it's often pitched as a regional versus urban kind of issue, and that is really wrong, because at the end of the day, we are all in it together. The impacts will not discriminate. And so we need mechanisms in place to make sure we have that regional equity, employment transitions plans in place. And so the bill provides for risk assessments to be done by an independent expert-based commission. And those risk assessments are focusing on all our sectors that need to decarbonise, but also where we're most exposed. So things like our bushfire risk being increased, lifetime of infrastructure, supply chain concerns, drought concerns, industry and employment challenges that certain regions will face, risk and challenges to certain industries, so for example the tourism industry. So they are all part of the bill in terms of the risk assessments, and then there's an obligation on the government to put in place adaptation plans and mitigation plans. So mitigation, of course, is reducing emissions in those budget periods.
Absolutely. Great. So you have a huge number of organisations supporting the bill, including Greenpeace, the Global Health Alliance, even Celeste Barber, which is fantastic. Do you expect to have good support from the government on this bill when it's introduced?
Look, like anything, the world of politics is the world of negotiation.
Of course.
But this is really important. I think this is where we've gone wrong with the debate on climate the last 10, 15 years in Australia. It's been very divisive and everyone's sort of gone to their corner and no one's been prepared to find the common ground to build a consensus. And so I see that very much as my role and what I've taken on. I've been having discussions with all sides of politics, government and opposition, senators and MPs, about rather than just, pointing out, being focused on the difficulties, it's actually be focused on building the consensus. So as far as the bill, I've had discussions with government about, what aspects do they support, what aspects do they have issues with, and trying to address their concerns. So I will be put out an amended draft next week that addresses some of the concerns and feedbacks we've had from different groups. And then I will present the bill on the 23rd of March. From that point, there will be a process of a second phase to this campaign of maintaining pressure. The government has to come up with a policy for Glasgow by November. And so it is really about maintaining that pressure so that they do come up with, that they support a net zero by 2050.
And do you think the passing a bill like this is enough of a first step towards defending our country against the climate crisis?
It's a first step. It's certainly not everything. I hear others that are more concerned that we need more drastic action, but we have to build the consensus. There's no point in being divisive. That hasn't gotten us anywhere for the last 15 years. So what we do need to do is build the consensus and having place a mechanism that allows us to accelerate towards the goal. Now, in that process, you can't start at you don't start at 100 kilometres an hour.
Of course.
You have to start gradually and have the mechanisms to accelerate, especially across the different sectors, because some sectors will be a lot easier to achieve than others. And so that is very much what's behind the framework of this legislation, is it's not being prescriptive on government on how to achieve it, but it is saying let's lock in our goal and lock in a process of accountability so that we can reassure the public that we are heading in the right direction. And what I'm really calling for is this should be a moral issue, a question of principle. That should be the subject of a free vote by MPs. This goes to Australia's long-term security. And I think as such is a matter of principle.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, Zali.
That was Zali Steggall, the federal member for Warringah, speaking to our producer, Eden Faithful, about her new climate change bill, which is aimed at reinvigorating our government's response to the climate crisis.
Don't move that dial, because next we'll be talking about private health insurance. Do we need it here in Australia? You can join the conversation and text us in on 0409 945 945 or tweet us at BackchatFBI.
That's right, but we're going to go to a song right now. This is my new favourite jam of the week. It's a remix of St. John's Roses. St. John actually played in Sydney 2 weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
So if you checked it out and you vibed it, let us know, text us in. But right now we're going to go to the song. Catch you all after the song.
It is absolutely laughable. The woman's off her tree.
Backchat, your alternative to talk back.
All right, okay, all right, Shami. Mm-hmm. I've got this pickup line that I've started using with guys I'm dating. Like, you know, guys in the early 20s.
Yeah.
I have, I work at a corporation and I have a corporate health plan.
Where is this going?
And I pull out the card and I'm like, baby, because it has my name number one, so last. And I go, baby, do you want to be number two on it? It's really rude.
That's horrible, but
like,
amazing.
You know, I just if we had a child, I could make sure that it's taken care of because it's a corporate health plan.
Oh my God, will you marry me, Sophia?
And the reason why it kind of works is because more and more Australians are actually not getting private health insurance because they don't see the value for its money and they live in Australia and they have Medicare.
You're right. In fact, consumer advocacy group Choice is fighting for a better, fairer health insurance, and we're about to speak to them about whether young people need the cover or if it's just a waste of our hard-earned dollars. We have Dean Price from Choice here to sort it all out for us. Hi there, Dean.
Hi, good morning.
Hi. So let's just dive straight into it. How does our private health insurance work, and what are some popular misconceptions about the system?
I guess the way that our private health insurance system works is by providing a different way of accessing healthcare. So we've got Medicare, everyone has access to hospitals. Usually that's free, might be cost for things like medicine and sometimes diagnostics. But private health insurance comes in two forms. The first, and actually the least favourite version, according to a number of people who are enrolled in it, is hospital cover. So that provides coverage for things like pregnancy, it provides cover for things like hip and knee replacements, but also things like mental health in hospitals and a whole range of other things. The other type, which is a little bit more popular, is what most people know as extras cover, and that covers things like dental, it can cover things like physio, it may cover things like access to nutritionists and dietitians. And they're the two main types of health insurance that we have. The out-of-hospital stuff, the extras cover, really is the stuff that isn't covered by Medicare or isn't often covered by Medicare. So, you know, there's no dental under Medicare, so it can be a good way of making sure that dental is a bit more affordable and accessible to people.
So why do you think so many young people are hesitant to get health insurance?
I think one of the reasons is that we've all kind of grown up with Medicare being in place for all of our lives. So we're kind of used to what the public system provides for us. And hopefully, as young people, we're being probably a little bit healthier than what we might be when we get into later life. And we've, you know, relied on the public system. It's worked for us. And a lot of people just don't see the need for paying that extra for private health insurance.
Mm.
So there's this youth exodus on premiums. What's the impact of that?
Yeah, sorry. Also, what does youth exodus mean?
So in the last 3 months of 2019, which is the most recent period that we have data, over 11,000 people aged between 25 and 29 dropped out of private health insurance. That's an interesting period of time for private health insurance because some policies allow people to stay on their parents' private health insurance up until age 25 if they're students. And so it's kind of at that point of 25 where people really need to start making a decision. It's also before some of the penalties kick in. So if you don't take out private health insurance by age 30, you can be hit with what's called a lifetime health cover loading, which charges people more for 10 years if they don't take out private health insurance at age 30.
Oh, so there are like, you're penalised for not getting private health care.
Only if you ever take it out. So there are a couple of different incentives and, you know, sticks and carrots that are in place. So lifetime health cover is one. So if, say, a person decides at age 30 that they can't afford it or don't want it, but they kind of, you know, when they get closer to 40, they're like, actually, you know, maybe my knee's getting a bit wobbly. I might kind of start thinking about some health things that might come up in the next few years. If they take it out at age 40, then they'll be penalised. There's a 10% extra on their premium for every year that they haven't taken it out since age 30.
So the government introduced some reforms last year to simplify the system. Can you give us a rundown of these changes and whether they've been effective?
Sure. So the main big change is to hospital cover, where they introduced a series of categories that's meant to make it easier to understand what you're getting for your health insurance. So there are four main categories, basic, bronze, silver, and gold. And they allow you to know that if I go to health insurer A and get a gold policy, then I'm covered for the same things that I go to if I go to health insurer B and get a gold policy. And that does make things easier to compare. But the problem was that industry lobbied for this plus category. And so you can get a basic plus policy, you can get a silver plus policy, you can get a bronze plus policy. And they're much more hard to compare to one another because it's up to the individual health funds what categories are in those plus categories. And when I say categories, it's different types of healthcare. So something like pregnancy cover is in the higher end of the plan. So it's covered in gold, it's covered in a lot of silver plus, and it is covered in some bronze plus, but very few. Whereas, you know, more regular things, you know, certain cancer treatments and other things are covered across a broader range. But the introduction of those plus categories just made it quite difficult to compare. And one of the things that we found last year was that there are a lot of insurers who were actually charging more for a silver plus policy than other companies were charging for a gold. So you could actually be paying more money and getting less coverage. So our assessment of that is that it didn't really bring the clarity that people wanted, and people are still confused by what is covered by their health insurance and what's not covered.
You're listening to Backchat on FBI Radio 94.5 FM with Sweta and Shami. We've got Dean Price from Choice on the line speaking to us about whether or not young people should have private health insurance. And we're asking people what they think of private health insurance, and we've got some texts in.
That's right. Sorry about that. So Stella from Sydney here, she says that Stella has private health insurance with HCF on top of standard Medicare, and Stella doesn't think that it changes much. They remember that it actually sped up the waiting time for an emergency surgery they had a couple of years back before heading into private hospital wait, but that's the only change it had. I guess it's a lot of money to pay to just speed up the waiting line. Perhaps that will make a lot of difference for some people, though. Interesting. We actually got another text in. They said that once you're over 30 and you start a family, it's atrocious expensive to afford private health insurance. I do know that. My mum always complains about how it is such a burden, the private health insurance. But it's also like when you're older, it's when you need it because you don't know when random surgeries are going to pop up, right?
You're right. I personally use it as a reminder to go to the dentist twice a year because I get a discount on getting a checkup, or I try and make sure I use up that money in my extras. So to me, it kind of helps me take care of myself a bit better. But is that...
No, speaking of that, we actually got a text in. Dean, this one is interesting. So Daniel from Paddington texted in and they said, I need to have both my wisdom teeth out. And I hear that a lot of private health insurers are so desperate to sign up new people that they're waiving their 12-month waiting period. So I'm planning to just sign up, have the extractions, and then cancel my cover. That's actually a very smart idea. What do you think about that, Dean?
It's actually rare for health insurers to waive those 12-month waiting periods. So if that's something that's on offer, make sure that it does cover what you're actually wanting to get. You know, maybe that is a case where it's actually quite good value. I mean, one of the important things to remember is that you can get extras without getting hospital cover. So if dental is your only concern, then you don't need to sign up to the hospital cover as well as the extras cover. And the other really often confusing thing about extras, particularly when it comes to dental, is that often there are quite strict set limits for things. And so sometimes your insurance will only pay a percentage, sometimes it will pay a flat fee, and sometimes it's cheaper to go to a dentist that the health insurer has an agreement with. So you need to make sure that you're actually going to go somewhere that gets you the best deal as well as the best healthcare.
So you just mentioned that you don't need private health insurance to just for hospital cover, but isn't that the primary reason people get private health insurance, to insure them when they go to the hospital?
Well, what we're seeing with how people are behaving, I think it's at the end of last year, hospital cover, about 44% of Australians had hospital cover, and that's the lowest it's been in a while. But extras cover was around 53%. So people are getting seem to like that sort of cover because it's stuff that isn't covered by Medicare. But it really depends on your own situation, and like financial situation is a big one. I think one of the people who texted in sort of mentioned value for money. We do regular research about what consumers are thinking about a range of different things, and so we ask people what they think of private health insurance. And 80% of people with private health insurance rate it as their number one cost of living concern. So
yeah.
People with private health insurance are more concerned about that cost than they are about gas and electricity and other things. So that's massive, and something that people need to take into consideration, whether they can actually afford this or not.
So you mentioned some of the work that Choice has been doing. So Choice has been campaigning for a fairer private health insurance system for a while. What more are you hoping to achieve in the industry?
What we've seen is a steady period of people dropping out, and particularly younger people dropping out of private health insurance. The Grattan Institute kind of describes both the cause and consequence of this as being a death spiral. So younger people are dropping out, often because it's too expensive. But that means that the healthier people who are insured, the number of healthy people who are insured is shrinking. And the people who are actually claiming against their insurance is increasing as a percentage of that group. And that puts pressure on premiums, pushes the prices up, and that pushes more people out. And so you're kind of in this spot where people who don't use it aren't paying for it, people who do use it are, and it pushes prices up and more people drop out. Mm-hmm. So we're calling for a complete and thorough review of the whole system. We're not sure that all of the incentives that are there actually work, because I think for a lot of people, once you get to, say, 10 or 20 years past age 30, if you haven't taken it out, then it becomes a real barrier, because you can be paying up to 70% extra on your premium just because you haven't taken it out at age 30. And so at some point, that becomes a barrier to people ever taking it out. So we just want to make sure that all the incentives are right. We also want to make sure that it's actually delivering in terms of providing what people want and what people need, and taking pressure off the public system, if that's actually what it's designed to do. Because if people are just paying and not getting a lot out of it, then actually we're just giving money to people when that money could be better to companies, when that money could be better spent on the public health system.
This is so interesting. Thank you so much, Dean, for talking to us this morning.
No problem at all.
That was Dean Price from Choice on the line, speaking to us about whether or not young people should have private health insurance. And that's all the time we've got for today.
That's right. Another big thanks to our producers, Natalie Sekulowska, Eden Faithful, and Pip Leeson. And thanks again to our guests, Zali Stegel and Dean Price.
We'll catch you next week. But before we do, we're going to play a song all about private health insurance. Well, it's not really all about it, but like that's how it's been phrased here.
Wait, please tell me where I'm
I'm going to find a song about private
I don't know. You're the one who finds the songs every week, no, Sartha.
The joke is... Okay, Shami, let's do that again. Okay. So now we're going to go to a song all about...
private health insurance. I'm sticking to this, guys.
We're going to play a song all about those of us who don't have private health insurance. And if you don't, you know where to find me if you want to be number two on mine, baby boy. Right.
Text in on 0409 945 945.
This is Young and Dumb and Broke by Khalid. Have a great Saturday, guys.